Call to order. This regular meeting of the Analaska City Council is called to order at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, April 9, 2024. Councilman Bell, can you read the mission statement, please?
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you. Can we get a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman? Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Longo? Mr. Tungle?
Here.
Mr. Tudyakov?
Mr. Councilman Longo and Mayor Tudyakov are excused. And Ms. Coleman, can you please join me on the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Recognitions of visitors. We got a fairly good audience tonight. Deputy City Manager, you have anybody?
I don't have any particular recognitions to make, but I do see several folks here from the school, and it's really great to see, but especially the five young people in the front row. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Next item is the adoption of agenda. Since we have several people out uptown and council is not quite ready for a discussion on an item on the executive session, may I have a motion and a second to amend the agenda by removing the 14A executive session?
Move to adopt the agenda.
I'll second.
Councilman Bell and seconded by Councilman Luby. So the agenda is amended, taking up the executive session.
I'll move to remove the executive session on the agenda 14A.
Second.
Okay. Motion made by Councilman Bell, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. Can I have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Okay. So now I need a vote to adopt the agenda in a second. I need a motion in a second to adopt the agenda.
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Got a second?
A second.
Okay, agenda is adopted. The agenda is adopted as amended. Next item is approve the minutes of previous meeting. May I have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the March 26, 2024 meeting?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the March 26, 2024 meeting.
Second.
Any objection? Hearing no objection, the proposed minutes are approved. Next item on our agenda is the reports. List of City Manager report. Deputy City Manager, can you please introduce?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Or Mr. Vice Mayor, I guess. Sorry about that. So Mr. Honka's report is in your packet, but I will highlight a few items. The first item in his report notes that we submitted an application to the EPA Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program. The final request ended up at nearly $132 million and covers four energy products, the first of which is to prove the Makushan geothermal resource. It also includes a request for solar electric generation, a request for wind electric generation, and also optimizing our diesel electric generation, including the other projects in the grant, increases our chances of success with the grant, with the goal of reducing emissions over the 5 years that it might take to get the geothermal resource online if everything's a go in the geothermal area. So we just wanted to let you know that that grant did get submitted, and we will hear about that probably not until October. The city was also awarded an AEA REVEEP grant for $169,000 to pay for new solar batteries at Icy Lake, an energy audit at the Pyramid Creek Water Treatment Plant, and LED upgrades in about 280 fixtures. So we actually were successful with that grant application, and we've been invited to apply for a second round of funding for that grant. So we'll get that together and get that going as well. And lastly, we look forward to a visit next week from our candidate for Director of Public Utilities. So he'll be here next week, and we are in the process of finalizing the itinerary, and we'll make sure and get that out to all of you. And that's right. Other than that, I'm here for questions if you have them.
Any question from the council? Hearing none, we'll move to the next item. Next item is the board and commission minutes of the Library Advisory Committee meeting that was held on March 4, 2024. There will be no presentation for this part and has been included in the packet for council information. Any discussion on the Library Advisory Committee? Hearing none, we'll move to community input and announcement. This is a time for a member of the public to provide information to council or to make announcement of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name. Everyone gets 3 minutes and council may not engage in dialogue.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. My name is Roger Blakely. I'm Director of PCR. Got a couple of things for you tonight. We have the Missoula Children's Festival Theater coming. They're going to be here. They're going to come. We're going to have all our kids sing and dance, and it's going to be great. Registration for classes is on the 21st. You got to be there on the 21st to register. Tryouts on the 22nd, 3:30. Don't be late. They'll practice from the 22nd to the 27th, and we'll have a wonderful program on the 27th. It'll be great. Also in May, we have our community spring cleanup coming. It'll be May 6th to the 20th, and we want everybody to go out. Snow is going to be gone by then. I promise you it will be gone. No more snow. And pick up the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roger.
It's going to snow till June now. Thomas Rufos, the president of the Alaska State Firefighters Association, mentioned last night we have a survey that we've put out to the community to discuss our firefighters ball. We'd like to get the community's input on an event that we would like to put forward for the community, maybe in replacement or the same thing. Just trying to get everybody's feeling for what they'd like to do for a night out. And we'll be putting up posters tonight around town. It's a QR code. Just snap the link there. And please help us out, and we can make the most of everybody's night. And the survey is going to end on April 30th. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. City Clerk, we're reading comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or the phone wish to speak?
No, sir. No comments submitted.
Next is the public comment on agenda items. This is the time for the members of the public to provide information to council regarding items on the agenda. They don't want to wait until the item comes up on the regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name, and everyone get 3 minutes and will not engage in a dialogue. Does anyone present wish to speak? Hearing none. City Clerk, we're reading comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom or phone wish to speak?
There were no written comments submitted, sir, and no one on Zoom indicated that they wanted to.
Okay. Well, we're moving fast. Next is up to the work session. May I have a motion and a second to go into a work session?
I make a motion to go into the work session.
I'll second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Luby. First on the work session is the presentation from Joy Mirror of BDO City Auditors regarding depreciation. Deputy City Manager, to introduce, please.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. Because there's been a lot of misunderstanding and confusion about how depreciation is handled in the context of municipal financial reporting, we've asked Joy Mariner from BDO, the city's contracted auditing firm, to join us this evening by Zoom to help educate both staff and council on this topic. So I welcome Joy and introduce her, Joy Mariner from BDO, and we'll turn it over to her. I think the city clerk is in the process of she'll be up in just a minute. She's going to put Joy's screen up here on the council chamber so you can see her as she presents.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Joy. We can hear you, but if you could hold on for just a second, please. Okay. Difficulties.
Can you share screen too? I can share my screen again if that's helpful.
Go ahead. Would you allow her to share video?
Yes. You can go ahead, Joy, and share your screen, please.
Okay. Okay. Can you see that okay?
One moment, please.
So it just keeps kicking me out of share screen. You want me to try again or hold up?
I think you can go ahead and start, Joy.
Okay.
We can see your face here in council chambers.
Okay. So thanks for having me here at the council meeting today. My name is Joy Mariner. And for those of you who have not been at one of the council presentations in the past for the audit, I serve as the lead engagement partner on the audit of the city. We are in the progress of the 2023 audit. But really what I'm here today to do is to go through just to kind of high level the way that the city is recording depreciation, because it has some significant dollar impacts on your financial statements. And we wanted to go through just how the city accounts for your what we call capital assets, property, plant, equipment, and those kinds of assets there at the city, because they are such a significant part of the financial activity of the city. And so we thought this would be helpful to do just a quick presentation for you on how your city is, and all cities, account for the capital asset activity. Can you see my screen now? Is it working?
No, Joy. It's still on one portion of the monitor here. Let me pull it over.
Okay.
Let me try.
I can just email you what I'm looking at, if that would be easier, and you can open it.
Yes, that will work.
Okay. Just let me know what email to send it to, and I can do that right away.
Did you get the email address, Joy, to send it to?
Yes, I have it. It should be on its way.
Thanks.
We had a meeting earlier today to test this, and it worked. So our apologies that you don't have that on my screen. I was hoping to be able to use my screen. So sometimes technology doesn't do what we hope it will. So it says it's sent on my end. Just let me know when you get it. And then when it does come in, we are going all the way to page 39 of the PDF.
Joy, why don't you try sharing your screen again?
Okay.
Pretty please. We have success. Please go on.
Oh, great. Okay.
If you can make it a little bit bigger, that would be great.
Yeah. I'll zoom in when we're talking.
Okay.
So the main reason we want to kind of go through this is because the way that you account for capital activity is a little different between your general fund and your governmental activities versus your enterprise funds. And I thought we'd go through the example in, for example, the Port and Harbor, although it's treated the same for your other major, other enterprise funds like the solid waste utility or water wastewater. So when you look at the Port and Harbor funds, and we're using the 22 numbers because they've been audited and published, and this is all public information at this point, you can see that the assets here, the total assets of the port are 120, almost 128 million. So this is at a point in time on a certain date, in this case, June 30th, how much you had in assets, which are just things that are owned by the city. And the largest category of assets that you own is capital assets. And capital assets are the things that are like property, plant, and equipment. So in the case of the Port and the Harbor Fund, it's largely things like the floats themselves or the docks. But it also includes things like the building or a truck or a lift that are all part of the port and harbor system. So this number, you notice it says capital assets net. And so what it's net of is accumulated depreciation. So when you purchase an asset and the city builds it or installs it, it gets put in at the full cost that it cost at the time it was purchased. So let's say it costs $100,000, just to make the math easy. You have $100,000 that you paid upfront for the cost of that asset. Some of these assets you finance with debt, but you're buying the whole asset at the time and you own it at the time that it's placed into service. And then you depreciate it over the time that you expect it to be useful. The wording that they use is used and useful. As soon as it's used and it's useful, you start depreciating it. So what that means is, let's say it's a $100,000 asset and you expect to be able to use it for 10 years. Then you would take that $100,000 and you would charge it to the port fund at $10,000 a year. So it's real cash that goes out the door. It's a real cost, but you charge it across the life that it's expected to benefit the users of the port and the harbor. So let's look and see how that actually impacts the financial statements of the port. Because when you look at this statement, which is the statement of revenues and expenses and changes in net position, what this statement is showing you, instead of one point of time, it's showing you a period of time. In this case, for the whole year, all the ins that came in as revenues, as charges for services, and the outs that went out as expenses. And you can see here, when you look at the port fund itself, the largest category of expense is depreciation. So a large portion of the expenses that the fund incurs every single year represents that cost that is being allocated across multiple years. So in this case, for the port, it's $4.4 million. You can see here for solid waste, it's $879. I won't go into all of the funds, but you can see that number is in each of the enterprise funds. And all that represents is all of the assets that are being used by the real customers for that year, what their allocated portion of the cost of the assets themselves is. And the port overall has a total revenue of $8.177 in 2022, total operating expenses of just under that, but almost a break-even position with depreciation included. Now, it's important to be able to understand how much depreciation is being charged to the fund. And the reason accounting has you do this is because that actually represents real use of those assets. And the payment for that cash might have been done up front, but you still do need to recover those costs through user fees or other means. When you look at 2022, if you look in a little more detail here, you have other things that you need cash for besides your actual operations. And that's, in your case, interest expense, and also your principal payments on your debt. And so what financial people try to do is sort of match your depreciation expense to what you need to pay on your debt for principal and interest, as well as what you may need for maintenance or capital improvements or future replacement. And the best way to see that is to look at the next statement, which is our cash flow statement. If we look at that one for the port, this just shows the cash that's coming in the door, and you're receiving this $8 million from your customers, and you're paying out amounts to your employees and your vendors for a net cash in the door from operations of 4.3. The reason for that is you're generating cash, but the depreciation represents an expense that you paid for upfront. But you need that cash in order to pay certain things, such as your principal payments on your debt and your interest payments on your debt. Right there, that's about $2.5 million that the port fund needs in order to satisfy your debt obligations. In addition to that, you also need money in order to construct and replace the capital assets as they, as they are used. Over time, I like my clients to have this number, this acquisition and construction number, to be over time about what your depreciation number is. Because if you aren't investing that back, at least maybe after debt, so if you take all of the money you have coming in for depreciation back out your debt payments, you need to be investing into your infrastructure for replacement and repair to ensure those assets can continue being useful for your customers long term. So those are the main numbers we look at from a financial statement perspective. And a lot of the, the way that you budget for the general fund is a little different, because you budget for things like the principal payments on your debt. that aren't budgeted in an enterprise fund, but it's important to budget for the actual depreciation that's coming out of the fund and to ensure that your rates are incorporating those as the cost of the true cost of doing that business. The only other comment I have, and I'm open to questions or any clarifications, but the only other comment I have is that the same pattern is in place for your other funds as well. You can see that maybe a little more easily on when you look at electric or water or wastewater. The same thing is true. They have depreciation and amortization costs coming in as expenses. And when you look at the cash flow for those funds, you're seeing a similar story where they're generating cash from operations, but that cash is being used to make payments on debt and to acquire additional capital assets. In fact, for a couple of these funds, that's even a little bit closer. There's not as much of a buffer. For example, when you look at wastewater, the charges for services coming in are not sufficient to cover your principal payments on your debt. So that's something that we do monitor pretty carefully over time to make sure that these funds are sustainable and that user fees are generating enough with, of course, with the city's desire for how you wish to use general fund monies to cover things. And also that you're sustaining kind of long-term ability to provide those services to the community. So I'll pause there. I know I went through a lot, but I wanted to just give you the outline of how the depreciation moves on the statements. And I'm happy to answer questions or provide additional clarification if you have any. And certainly, Patricia, if there's anything you wanted me to cover in addition, I'm happy to do that.
Any question from the council? Councilman Luby got a question.
So if, depending on where the original money comes from for the asset, does that make a difference whether it should show up in, like, so we transfer money out for a capital project, for example, out of the proprietary fund if we're funding it through the proprietary fund. But if we fund it, say, from the 1% special revenue fund, now that is not being transferred out of the proprietary fund. So does that make a difference in how it affects what we should be charging the customers?
Does that an excellent question. When you look at, you know, and if you have experience in other like utilities, regulated utilities, they actually are required to track the sources of the funding for capital. Governments don't. And the reason, I think the reason for that is that they, you know, there's a need to essentially track how much the actual cost is and the actual use of it. So the real users of this, of the Port and Harbor this year are benefiting from $4.4 million of use of the assets underlying the Port and Harbor. Same is true for the other utilities as well. Where, how you choose to fund that, how you choose to pay for it is, you know, really a management decision, a council decision. Certainly a lot of our, governments statewide are not fully charging for the use of their port. I would say that's more common in port than it is maybe for electric or water sewer. And some of that might be because they are able to recover some of the original costs with, say, grant funding or for even contributions from the users of the port from on the front end. And so there's not a desire to go and fully collect the depreciation on the back end. And as you said, if you're funding it with other sources or if it's everybody's expectation that they're not going to pay for the full cost of those assets, that can be a really good argument for not doing so. I audit the Port of Alaska, for example, and they also undercharge compared to the amount of the depreciation on those assets. That being said, I think we, you know, we look forward as an accounting. The accounting world looks at the actual cost and the actual use of that port would be included in that depreciation. So the customers are benefiting from the use of $4.4 million of the port in this year. That doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to be the council's intention to recover. So how you choose to recover the cost is different than the depreciation amount that might be recorded.
Got a follow-up question, Councilman Luby.
So if we're taking money out of the 1% special revenue fund, and we purchase, you know, say, I'm just going to say gasifier because that's something that's coming up here.
Okay.
And so we purchase that asset, and now that asset, in order, we need to depreciate it to recover that fund, but we are not charging the fund specifically, the solid waste fund for it originally. And so we're recovering the cost through depreciation. Is that correct?
If your rates are set to recover all of depreciation, then yes, that's true. If you look at solid waste, it's operating at a loss. So that's not the case. Not all of the depreciation is being recovered in solid waste. You're pretty much break even at the port, but not all of, you know, if you actually look at your utilities, only electric in 22 and really port broke even. Only electric was really recovering enough there. But electric does have a more significant debt load. Electric and port are, you know, have a higher debt load than the other funds do.
So if we were recovering that cost through depreciation when it's time to replace it, we would have the funds available to replace it and we wouldn't have to take them. Is that correct?
You would have the original cost value. If you've been recovering depreciation, then the original cost value would be included in your net position value as you move forward. So yes, that's being held. In the case of the port, you know, you're recovering the depreciation, but it's half, at least more, a little more than half, $2.5 million is being used to cover interest expenses and debt service payments. So, you know, let's say $1.5 million, $1.8 million is being essentially used to either purchase new equipment this current year or held to be able to use in the future. But that's based on the original cost, not based on the replacement cost. So presumably assets will be more expensive to replace when the 10 years or 30 years is over.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Other question? Councilman Bell?
Sure. All our utility rates here, the last time we set the rates, we set them at a cash basis and didn't fund the accrual or the depreciation on any of these utility funds. I guess what's the long-term outlook, or what does it do to our financials when we look at, you know, the monthly and annual financials?
Right. So that's a good question. And it's something a lot of cities are really facing right now, especially with not having as much capital grant activity from the state of Alaska. So where, you know, I think for many years, the cities could rely on receiving capital grants for those replacements when they came up. That's less the case now than it was. We are seeing some amount of port infrastructure money coming through from the federal government right now, but less so on the other utilities. So without kind of recovering all of depreciation plus some for inflation, it is difficult when you look long term to have a capital plan in place. So my recommendation there is to be, you know, talking about a capital replacement project, or sorry, project, not project, a capital replacement plan. And some of our clients are actually putting into place sort of a shorter term and a longer term capital plan that would build into rates some amount that could allow you to be ready for when you do need to do more major maintenance or major replacement. Otherwise, what you end up doing is you know, let's say you have to put in a whole new dock system. You don't have a grant for it. You would end up probably bonding for it and then increasing the rates. So it's a little bit of a rate shock at the time you do that project, because that rate has to increase enough to cover the debt service on the new dock. And so one way to kind of smooth that rate shock is to be building up a reserve until that happens, so that when you go and you issue the bonds, you're already at a level that is sustainable and you've been able to pay for some of it along the way. And so that's kind of one strategy you can use. But oftentimes what ends up happening is that hasn't been done. And so you bond for it, and then the customer's paying for the bond and interest for a majority of the project. Normally you can't bond for all of the project, but, you know, hopefully between a mix of bonds and grants and general fund monies or other funding sources, you can build the project and then you build it into future rates.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Hey, no other question? Councilman Bell?
This is more of a question for staff, and it may not be something we can answer right now, but is taking a look moving forward on how we fund some of these capital projects, is having a plan, or are there other ways that we can look at how we fund these in the future, whether we're going to like set aside money, whether it's through funding the depreciation, or when we're looking at capital projects, that we are setting monies aside ahead of time until that project is funded. Are there other avenues or other ways of doing this? I'm not necessarily a financial guy, so I'm just looking for a little bit of input.
Go ahead, Deputy City Manager.
So sitting right here, of course, I don't have a nice, long-winded, well-informed answer for you. But the finance director and I can definitely sit down and talk about that. My guess would be that we don't have appropriate revenues to be funding projects as we go, you know, or to be funding depreciation. But I'm going to ask our finance director, Patricia Soule, to come down and give you her thoughts on that.
Patricia? I'll just jump back in here real quick. I mean, we've got the Captain's Bay project, which, you know, we're still trying to figure out how we're going to fund that. And just, you know, having some kind of plan or, you know, moving forward in the future on how we fund some of these major projects.
Specifically on Captain's Bay Road, one of the things we're looking at is a local improvement district where we would apportion part of, you know, we would charge the landowners with frontage on that road. The people who would benefit from the improvements would help pay for them. That's one thing that we're looking at for that. But of course, we're not there yet. Patricia?
So for most utilities, you have rate studies done and you plan for reserves and you plan for what you need to do to fund those kind of major maintenance activities. We luckily have a 1% fund that's going to help us hopefully through some of our emergency things that have come up for capital projects. But mainly, if you want it to work well, one of the suggestions from the auditor was bond debt or other things. But if we're looking at funding it fully ourselves or through grants, that involves planning. And that's what the CMMP is for, trying to decide how we do this in a way that we can afford it and we can do it without putting out money and not really being ready for it.
Thank you. I wasn't really sure how to ask the question. I mean, we have some, you know, Ms. Libby brought up the gasifier, you know, we're looking at a $9 million project and there's not money in that proprietary fund to pay for it. So just thoughts on how we pay for these things moving forward. So thank you.
Thanks, Patricia.
Other question? Hearing none, go ahead. Is there more presentation?
Joy, did you have more for us?
No, nothing more for me, but just know that I do work for the council. I'm happy to answer questions and just reach out through the mayor or through Patricia. I'm happy to have a conversation directly with you. If you do have any questions on the financials and other in detail, I'm happy to be here to answer them the best I can.
Thank you so much for joining us, Joy. That was very helpful.
Have a nice evening.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Any other discussion on the presentation for the video? Hearing none, we'll move to the second item on the work session, the FY25 school budget presentation. Deputy City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. We'd like to welcome Kim Hanisch, the superintendent of the Unalaska City School District, to tonight's meeting. Ms. Hanisch will be presenting the school's FY25 budget proposal and request for funding from the city. The school district timely submitted their proposed school budget by April 1st, as required by our code, and the city council must determine within 30 days the sum of money to be made available from local sources for school purposes and must appropriate that funding by June 30th. So those are your deadlines that are set out in code. And it also goes on to say that if you don't inform them of the funding sum within 30 days, they get what they ask for. Curiously in code. So the school's request this year is $5,996,810, which is a bit more than a half a million more than last year. But Kim's here and she's going to run us through it. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you. And Vice Mayor Tungle and City Council members, thank you. I'm Kim Hanisch, Superintendent, and I appreciate this opportunity to represent our board as well as our school community by sharing our fiscal year 25 budget. And before I jump in, following that presentation showed me one, I thought our budget was complicated. This is going to sound so simple to you now. And second, I do want to right off the forefront, recognize that we're in challenging times, but the city is as well. So when we ask this, it is coming with that recognition that it may not be possible to fund everything that we need. So with that said, I do want to recognize some people here today that have helped us come forward with this fiscal year 25 budget. So to start with is our school board members. We have a couple here today. David Gibson, president. Carrie Mahoney's our secretary. We have Amanda Schmall, Trevor Shishnikov, and Brian Rankin. And we also have, not on that list, and I'm very embarrassed about this, our student representative is here tonight, and that's Tuan Bui. So thank you for that and their commitment to helping us form a budget that will promote student achievement. They took advice from the budget committee this year, appreciation for the time that they volunteered, probably put in about 8 hours in January, beginning of February, and really dug in with always what's best for students, what's possible for our students. And then finally, I do want to recognize our business manager, Leticia Holloway. She has number crunched for like 4 months and tries to find answers to every one of my little questions along the way. So we could not have come forward with this budget without her help. So thank you. All right, let's jump right into the numbers then. As mentioned, we come here tonight to request funding in a total of $5,996,810, recognizing this is an increase in a request of $501,568. I'll take time going through the individual items as we proceed tonight. And at any time, if you have questions, you feel free to interrupt or just wait till the end. Okay. Although we're asking for an additional $500,000 from the city this year, just want to paint the picture that we do come in here trying to be very conservative. In our projected budget, the revenues that we anticipate for this upcoming year will decrease by 5.66%. So our projected revenues is approximately $7.7 million. Our projected expenditures will increase only 2.2%. But with that, we are building a budget of expenses at $8.2 million. Simple math shows you that we are building this budget in the deficit. We anticipate being in the deficit by $485,000. Our fund balance will be zero, if not just a little bit below zero by the end of this year. So how did we come to this point? Both the board and the committee always took what the students need and comes first. So what is our vision, our mission, and strategic plan? With that, we had to make some assumptions that are very difficult to make when we're in the situation that we are in student and school funding. But with those assumptions, then we analyzed revenues, expenditures, and tried to determine if we have to make further reductions where they might come from. We did the same for the special funds as well. Starting out with our general operating budget, projected revenues I'll discuss first and then into expenditures. So we get revenues from two sources, obviously, and that's the state as well as the city. And there's a few other tiny revenues that come in there. But when it comes to state appropriations, they determine how much money to fund based on our student enrollment. So that's the first thing that we had to do as a committee is decide how are we going to build this budget? How many students do we think we're going to have next year? So at that time, at the end of January, beginning of February, we looked at the last two 3 years, and it looked pretty solid to say let's build it on an enrollment of 350 students. as well as build it on 6 intensive needs students, which we have in our school systems right now. I do want to say that 2 weeks ago when I shared this presentation with the city, that our current enrollment at that time was actually 343. Today, our current enrollment is 340. And we also know that we have at least 6 other students that will leave the school before the end of the school year. So as we built the budget on 350, I'm a little nervous about the solidity, I guess, of the budget. Okay. One other thing that we had to consider as we built the budget is how the state would fund us this year. This is a pretty old picture you might have seen. We keep adding pencils to it. But this is trying to depict state funding on base student allocation. So how much money does the state provide per student? And the tips of the pencils is at BSA. So you can see over the past 12, 13 years, the tip of the pencil is hardly raised. In the past 8 years, it basically hasn't. In other words, the state has flat funded public education. The line that you see going down there, that black line, that is referring to inflation and what the actual value of a dollar is today compared to when we started tracking this. So there's a deficit. Another way to say it is basically they aren't inflation proofing the budget. They're not increasing to go along with inflation, which puts us in the situation that we're at right now. So we built our projected budget that they'll flat fund because that's what they've been doing and the governor threatens to do. We're also building it on that we will not get one-time funding, which is outside that BSA. Last year, we got $233,000 outside that at the last minute that the governor approved. The way he talks right now, I'm not positive he's going to provide any additional funding for education. So I think we were safe with those assumptions. One positive on our assumption, we did not think we would get the broadband assistant grants or BAG grant. He did approve that funding. And so there is approximately $125,000 that we'll have available in our budget that we didn't expect. So there's bad and there's good that goes into this. Okay, so how this works. We built the budget again on 350 students. So you can see that up at the top, that 8 average daily membership, 350. That number goes through the foundation formula, a whole bunch of different calculations, and we end with that total of 955.84. So what really happens is the question in the funding formula is how much does it cost to teach a student in Unalaska compared to Anchorage? And as it goes through, it's saying that 350 students actually is equal to 955 students. So that number is taken times that base student allocation, which again, we're budgeting that it's going to stay the same, flat funding of $5,960 for BSA state total aid of roughly $5.7 million. We don't get all of that, though, because the state then says the city's required by state statute to fund. How much will the city be required? That's taken out of that $5.7 million. So we anticipate with 350 enrollment and the flat funding that the state will contribute approximately $3,222,000. Adding to our revenue again is the city appropriation. By state statute, as mentioned, there is a required local contribution that is 2.65 mils of the assessed property value, which on Alaska's is $935,873,000. So the required contribution from the city is roughly $2.5 million. There is an allowable 2 mils that could be added if the city so chooses. And so 2 mils would be an ask of an additional $1,870,000 roughly. So the total ask of a maximum allowable contribution that we come forward with is for $4,351,810 in the general fund. So it all looks like this, then the state clear on the right side is the fiscal year 25 projection of contributing the $3.2 million. We ask the city to contribute that roughly $4.4 million. We have a few extra sources of revenue for a total revenue, as mentioned clear at the beginning, of $7.7 million. A couple of other things just to really emphasize here. The state, if you look from fiscal year 21 on the left side, compared to fiscal year 25, that state contribution has been decreasing, partly due to the fact that we've been decreasing our student enrollment, but also due to their choice in funding. The city, on the other hand, as you go left to right, you can see, and again, I thank you for the generous contribution of always contributing to the max and basically taking the place of what the state is not able to do at this time. So thank you. All right, that moves us into expenditures. We did build the fiscal year 25 budget with the attempt to just stay status quo, not grow programs, not add things. Let's just be as great next year as we are this year, okay? With that, we had to take in consideration that we can't avoid some increases, and increases just due to inflation as well as movement on the salary schedule. So we built a budget with 3% known increase in salary, 5% anticipated increase in insurance, and then a 2% increase in student travel due to inflation, not extra trips. With all of that, we asked the committee the tough question, if we have to decrease spending, where should we look? And they gave our board and myself the list to consider first, reduce the purchase of library books, not eliminate, but just reduce, look at supplies in all departments, professional development, and maintenance projects. They asked us to consider very last any reduction in staff or technology supports. So over on the right side, we did take their advice, knowing that we do have to make cuts. We can't stay status quo all the way across. So if you look at the line item budget, you'll notice that in almost every department or fund, the supplies have decreased. That we're budgeting for, as well as the purchase of library books. You'll also notice on the line items that we did decrease. It was an assumption on the insurance base cost. We met with the insurance company about 3 weeks ago now and learned that that assumption was inaccurate. Even though it's been the trend for the past few years, they let us know that our base cost will actually increase 5 to 6%. So we didn't do so good on that assumption. One more thing on the left side, you'll see that at the very bottom, we have 0.5 additions certified and 3 classified. On the surface, that is the case. Last year, we budgeted for those positions and they went unfilled, and we're continuing to budget for them this year. So the budget is an increase, but the number of people we hope will increase as we get fully staffed. So our total expenditure for fiscal year 25 is roughly $8.3 million, which is a 2.44 increase from fiscal year 24. Rate of inflation is basically what's causing that increased budget of expenditures. And again, it takes us to our dilemma that as we built that with only an increase with the increase of just 2.44, we know that we will be draining our fund balance going into fiscal year 26. So just a recap of the request that we have for the city, and that is in our general operating budget of $4,351,810. Special funds. These are the funds that are outside the general operating budget, which the community or city council has approved in the past. These are areas in which you can tell us how you want that money spent or to what that money is going for. And so you have been able to provide money in 4 areas: community schools, food service, student activities, and preschool. In the community schools fund, we're requesting this year $975,000, knowing that that is a huge jump of $245,000 from the previous year. A couple of rationales to support this request. One, you'll notice that when we've been requesting a 60-40 approximate split, and that's for the community schools is paying for electricity, for fuel, for custodial care, and some of the maintenance care. And so in the past, district has in their operating fund paid 60% of those costs, and the city has contributed approximately 40%. Staying there has been bringing us into the red in that fund balance. couple of things that we think are contributing to that is the swimming pool use has dramatically increased up past, which is an exciting thing. There's a lot of people swimming, which means we're not we're. Ms. Small is overseeing the fact that it's going to cost more to heat that pool. It's also more turnover with water. So they have to drain some and add some, which if you've ever looked at your wastewater bill, it kind of shocks me on what it takes to refill or to empty the pool more than it takes to fill it, which just blows my mind. So that's a significant impact that we're feeling right now. Also, really, another good thing is we are every year having more community school activities within our buildings, which is awesome. But every time we add one, that's more electricity, more fuel, and more custodial care that's needed as well. So we're asking to look at it instead of a 60-40 split, more of a 50-50 split, which leads to that increased request. In food service, last year you contributed $275,000. This year we are asking for $300,000. That's mainly to cover the increase in shipping. This is one of these areas that I, even though you can see a huge red number over there, I do feel like I, as well as the school district and board, together can figure out ways to become more fiscally responsible in this area. Right, this whole past year, we're trying to figure out the cost of food. Where are we spending too much? We want the great meals that are being produced, but how can we do that and save cost? And at the current time, we're finding many alternatives and places to buy and ways to substitute some of the things that we're purchasing. So I think as we get more efficient looking at those numbers, we're going to be finding savings there. And another area that I know we can become more efficient is just the ability to collect payment for meals that are being served. In student activities, last year was the first time that we came forward and asked for funding in this area. City Council approved $140,000 to contribute to the student travel and student activities. We're asking for an additional $20,000 in this area as well, only based on the rate of inflation and travel-related cost. Just to put this in perspective, early this week, end of last week, we signed a contract, renewed the contract with Aleutian Airlines. They did have to increase their fares this year. Last year, they didn't. And even though they're increasing, it's still a very generous fare rate that they're providing. But that increase is 6%. So I did the quick math, and I took 6% times all the trips that we took this year. And if we just maintain status quo, don't increase travel, just the airfare for students is going to increase $30,000 next year. And then finally, the last special fund is the preschool. We asked for $10,000 increase in funding there for a total of $210,000. That's mainly, again, to cover inflation and the increase of salary movement on that schedule. We also want to make sure not to increase tuition. We want as many students as possible to be able to take advantage of the quality education that's setting them up for success as kindergartners. So all that we're trying to do in this budget is really help move towards our mission and our vision. And to do that, we need to be able to hire and retain quality teachers, as well as help them grow so that they are able to adapt instructions so that all learners can thrive, and so that the learning environments stay small class sizes so that there's more joy and a caring environment there. And by doing so, we know we can expand opportunities for students to navigate various journeys and find their own personal future journey. So thank you for considering the request that we set forth tonight. I know we cannot accomplish what we want without your support, and also know that we may not be able to get your full support this year. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Council discussion. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I know when we start looking at the budget here, at least in my opinion, that the schools is probably the very last place we would look to cut anything in our budget. And I don't see why we can't. And fund the schools at the, you know, what the ask is. But, you know, once we get into the budget, we'll have a better idea. So it is an investment, and it's money well spent. So thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think that, you know, the schools are very important, and the education of our kids, the experience they get, even, you know, the extra, you know, outside of the normal general fund, all the extra things that we're able to do. It's important that kids have food so that they can learn well. It's important for them to travel. They learn so many different things when they're traveling. So that's actually, it's actually a learning experience when they get on those planes and go. The preschools are super important to set them up, just like you said. You know, and our community schools, they are costing the school a lot more money because, you know, just a couple weeks ago here, we had, you know, the PCR director telling us they've increased activities. And that does, you know, create a hardship for the school. So I appreciate the presentation, and I think you guys did really well at, you know, doing the cuts and where you could. And I don't have a problem funding the school completely. Thank you.
Councilman Nicholson.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. That was very good. And the public school system is something that we should always stand behind, and I will support, you know, getting you what you guys need. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Council, Mayor and Council, even previous years, always a big support. We go our way to fund the school, and it's something where this community is proud of. The school is being represented well when they go out of town, and a lot of communities envy us the way we support our school in here. And they produce a lot of good students when they go out and travel outside. And my daughters are among them. So, and I am in big support of the school, and we'll see how it goes in here. And we always fund it to the max. Thank you.
Thank you. And if I could add one other thing, if the state does come through with funding, I'm more than willing to give back what we say we need, if that's a possibility. So we definitely aren't trying to make money or ask for things that aren't needed at this time.
Thank you.
You can ask for a public comment if you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Does anybody in the public wish to speak on this item? Hearing none, we'll go to the next item under work session. Next item is a final CMMP presentation, rolling stock and painting plan. Deputy City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So we're going to have two separate people presenting under this topic. First, the CMMP with Mr. Dean, our planning director, and then Scott Brown, our public works director, will come up for the painting plan. So first on the CMMP, here's Cameron Dean, and he's going to present the final FY25-34 capital and major maintenance plan. We see that Mr. Dean covered several topics in his memo that was in your packet, and we're here to respond to any questions if you have them. The next step on the CMMP is we've scheduled this for adoption on April 23rd for the CMMP. So take it away, Cameron.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Vice Mayor Tungle and Council. So you've seen drafts of the CMMP a couple times now this season, so I'm just going to focus on what's changed and address a couple of the questions that came up at the last meeting. But after that, happy to answer any questions about that or the CMMP as a whole. So on this draft, for FY25, we're looking at $17.8 million in total. Of that, close to $10 million is still that grant from the Captain's Bay Road CTP award, $843,000 from the general funds, about $4.5 million from various proprietary funds, and then $2.5 million from the 1% funds. Looking at future years, so this came up as a question at the last meeting. That we're always trying to look at keeping the funding sustainable year to year as we're doing a 10-year CMMP. But if you look at the graphs on this page, that doesn't seem to be the case for FY26 or FY27. Those are really long bars. And that's for a couple of reasons. Those are mostly several large projects. It's resurfacing at the UMC, the solid waste gasifier, fire station, pyramid water storage tank. For all of those, we're actively pursuing grant funding and external funding for those projects. I think we include all of that on the CMMP in order to give you a complete picture of all the, you know, capital projects that we see on the horizon, but we might not have the funding completely resolved for them. So, for example, the UMC, you know, Peggy's talked about partnering with Mattson and the grant opportunity that they're going after for that. We're not looking to fully pay for that project out of the Forest proprietary funds. It just shows they're on there because that's not completely resolved yet. So I just wanted to clear that up. I think it's something that going forward, we're going to look to do present better on the CMMP to you. I don't think we're communicating that effectively, especially now that we're kind of focusing more on external funding. So the one big change with FY25 on the CMMP this year is how we're doing funding projects out of the 1% funds. So at the previous presentation, we spoke about the Captain's Bay Road waterline extension for $4.7 million they're proposing out of the 1% funds. So you see on your agenda tonight, there's a budget amendment for that, but with the need for that, the urgency, it makes sense to pull that off of the CMMP and do a budget amendment instead for that. But we also have some other needs coming up, and we moved one of those, the public work building roof at $2.5 million, onto the 1% fund rather than the general funds. So between that and the waterline extension budget amendment, that would be about $7.2 million from the 1% funds. Other roof replacements, we spoke about them a bit last time. There's several that we know are coming on the horizon, but we are still scoping out exactly what needs to be done with the aquatic center, the pool, or sorry, the aquatic center and the airport terminal. So we're expecting that in the future, but right now those aren't on the CMMP. And then I wanted to talk about the fire and police stations that came up as a question at the last meeting. We did do a feasibility study in 2020 that was looking at the current building, found that it wasn't meeting the needs for either department, and is looking at building a new police station or where the current skate park is, and that site's no longer available. We're definitely pivoting a lot with that, really changing gears with it. We're proposing a new fire station building, integrated training facility on the CMMP, followed by a police station. There's a lot of reasons for that, of why the fire department feels that is better meeting their needs going forward than what was proposed on the feasibility plan. I won't get into all of that, but in short, we feel that is the best approach to, the most cost-effective approach for them to meet all those needs for the community. It also more closely aligns the project with the funding opportunities that we see coming on the horizon. I think Ben's talked a bit about that with you. They're looking at the feasibility study this year for that. It's on their operating budgets that'll be presented at the next regular meeting on April 23rd. We've moved around the schedule a little bit, so gonna have one more opportunity to talk about the CMMP for follow-up questions, and then the resolution to adopt it will be on April 23rd, same time we're talking about the operating budgets. But with that, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions about what was in the memo or other projects on the CMMP.
Any question? Councilman Bell.
Yeah, there's several projects that are going to get paid by proprietary funds. What are the balance in those proprietary funds? Do we have the money to pay for them out of there?
Are there specific projects you're looking at, or?
There's a whole list,
sure,
of projects there. So it's the same question that happens every year, is when we start taking money out of the proprietary funds. What's the balance? Is there money in there? And will it affect rates?
Sure. Patricia's walking up, so she has the numbers. I would say for, you know, future years, the FY26 and 27, a lot of those big numbers that you're seeing are coming from proprietary funds right now. in the CMMP. Those are projects that we're definitely looking for external funding to help with.
Yeah, we're at 26 is probably a little premature. Some of those projects, I'm definitely not going to support the monies that are. So I'm just going to concentrate on 25 for right now. Thank you.
Sure. Did you want to come up, Patricia?
I don't have anything definite on the enterprise funds. Where our fund balance is. That is something that we're currently working. But I don't really have anything to add other than, yeah, we're still working on that, and hopefully we'll come forward with that on the 23rd. So you'll have an idea of where we're at.
Thank you.
Other question? Councilman Luby?
So, and this isn't for FY25, this is more for the future. So we have the fire station on here, but we also have a police station. So what's to happen with the current police and fire station? Neither one of them is going to utilize that. So is there a plan for that?
Sure, we're still looking at that. So the feasibility study that was done in 2020 did show that the building's in overall good condition. It's just really hard to adapt to other uses with the way the interior is laid out. A part of doing this feasibility study in FY25 for the fire department, we'd be looking at that whole campus and potentially how we can reuse that building, if that would make sense.
Okay, yeah. And it's really scary looking at 26 and 27. There's some big numbers there. And I can see that we have some, pretty good things that we need to take care of. And so I was thinking about this afternoon, and I'm like, we built all these buildings about 30 years ago. So they've all pretty much, met the end of their life or need major repairs, new roofs. Probably you're looking at siding and windows at some point. But with all of that, so we know those expenses are coming up, just to maintain the assets that we have right now. The electricity is a huge issue, and it has been for a while that we need to really concentrate on. And I think that's super important to make sure that we take care of that, along with some other maintenance items. So I'm going to be looking at the, taking care of the assets we have currently. And as much as I would love to support building a new fire station with the things that's coming up on the horizon, it's really scary to think about that. And it's just kind of bad timing, I think, with, the 30 years that we're looking at, for all the current stuff that we have, because we built a lot in the 90s. And now that stuff needs to be taken care of. So it just concerns me about building more assets with that. So I'm going to be looking at that pretty closely too. So anyway, but we have to take care of what we have for sure. Thanks.
Thanks.
You have a question? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, next up, we have our Director of Public Works, Scott Brown, who's going to review our planned purchases of rolling stock for FY25 and a three-year painting plan for the city.
Thank you, Vice Mayor and Council. I'll start with rolling stock first, if that's all right. Rolling stock policy. The city of Unalaska has a formal 7-page written rolling stock replacement policy. The policy went into effect January 1st, 2008. it establishes the vehicle maintenance chief as the main person responsible for making recommendations to replace and remove vehicles and equipment from our rolling stock fleet. The rolling stock includes vehicles, equipment, trailers, mixers, pumps, generators, etc. that move under their own power or are created to be pulled behind a motor power vehicle or pieces of equipment. It also includes stationary equipment such as generators, air compressors at the landfill, welders, the tire baler, and pumps. The city presently has 196 pieces of rolling stock and equipment in inventory. And that inclusion for the unit, sorry, I lost my place. Inclusion for the schedule for inclusion or for the next surplus sale. Also, the rolling stock replacement works under essentially four recommendations. Each physical year, the replacement list is initiated by the vehicle maintenance chief based on results from an annual inspection and evaluation, and in light or any extraordinary circumstances associated with a specific piece of rolling stock. In addition, when a vehicle reaches the recommended review date, the following criteria are used to determine whether the vehicle warrants replacement. Number one, reliability. The level of reliability is required for the job. Number two, historic maintenance and repair cost. And number three is current physical condition of the asset. And number four is other factors as such as safety and regulatory requirements. With that, if I could pull up the, thank you, Ms. Garland, the rolling stock. So we'll go ahead and start on that. So the very first piece of equipment up there is the F-250 4x4, and that was the vehicle that Chief Knowles was able to obtain the grant for. And so that vehicle is fully granted and funded. Council approved that in prior sessions. The plan is that we're going to take, when that vehicle arrives, we'll take the existing vehicle that we're going to replace is the fire vehicle 5149, and which is a 4x4 Expedition. We're going to look at that Expedition to see if possibly we might be able to trade that. We're going to reevaluate that vehicle once we pull that out, but possibly we're going to look at replacing that with the dog catcher's vehicle to keep it within the public safety division, seeing as that vehicle really wasn't slated to be replaced yet. The only reason we're doing it is because the grant opportunity came, but the dog catcher vehicle is probably in need of some look at. So that's our plan with that vehicle. We have a new vehicle that we're proposing for UPD, and that is we're going to get a new 4x4 Expedition, and we're going to replace vehicle 5565. And then that vehicle that we replaced the new one with will replace the ports, one of the ports vehicles, either the harbor master or the deputy port director. And then that vehicle that we replaced from them, we're either going to turn that into a, the plan is to turn that into a floater for City Hall. And then the next vehicle is a trailer. The first vehicle or ask for that 4x4 Expedition is $90,000, and that includes all the regalia that they need for police vehicles and the purchase of the vehicle. The next vehicle after that is TR2 with facility maintenance, and that's the trailer that you'll see them every once in a while towing the scissor lift around with, and it's just, its useful life is just getting close to the end. It's almost 24 years old. Our plan is to replace that with a new trailer, a little bit bigger, that will fit the same scissor lift on it that it has, and the new trailer replacement will be $30,000. The other ask is from the roads department, and that's a dump truck, DT2, needs to be replaced. It's ending the end of its useful life. I'd also like to point out that we'll probably see a couple more dump trucks following this in the next couple years. And the reason is that they're just aging out. I'm talking with the roads chief. It's really a difficult situation for them. They don't want to give up the older equipment because it's easier to work on. It's the problem is part availability is getting tougher for them. And then just keeping the equipment right. And the reason that replacing them is so difficult is because the new equipment that comes in is all computerized. And there's a learning curve with that, as well as there's a lot of proprietary information for that. And you have to go through the dealer to reset exhaust and simple things that we used to be able to do on our own. So they would prefer to just keep the older stuff and keep using it. the next one is an ask for the public works utilities. And this would be specific for the line crew. And what they're looking for is a 304 Cat mini excavator with a trailer. And the estimated cost for that is $150,000. And the reason behind that is they do have an existing backhoe that we got. It's just a little bit wheeled backhoe. It's just too big. I mean, it works great for most of what we're working on, but some of the trenching projects that we're going to be working on, as well as just working around replacing transformers, it's difficult to get in there with that big equipment. So they are requesting a 308 mini excavator. And the cost of that is $150,000. And then the last one is, this is Public Works Facility Maintenance Service Truck. And it's just reached the end of its useful life cycle. We believe we could replace that truck for $80,000. The existing truck that we replace would be moving out to the landfill. And then we would be surplusing the vehicle that we replaced that with the landfill. That's all we have this year for the rolling stock. It would be in total out of the general fund, $493,300, and out of the electric fund, $150,000, totaling for all the rolling stock would be $643,300. Is there any counts? That's all we have for the rolling stock this year.
Council question? Councilman Bell.
Maybe you can elaborate on the top of the list there, that Ford Expedition. It was getting swapped out with the animal control officer, or it was being moved? I didn't quite understand where you were moving it.
Yes, the vehicle that we're going to swap out with the new vehicle that we got the grant for the pickup truck, that's going to replace an Explorer in the fire department. And then the thought was, is that we would, there's still useful life in that Explorer in the public safety role. And so our thought was, is that we would look at one of the less vulnerable cars, like the dog catcher or something in the public safety side, and see if it would merit, if it's a better trade, essentially. And then whatever vehicle comes in that will stay in service, and will be turned into a floater.
Okay. And then the mini excavator, the 304 Cat excavator, what has the line crew? I guess we don't have a line crew right now, do we?
We don't.
We don't have a line crew. Who's going to be using
Why are we
going
to do that? Yeah.
Is there not another excavator that's is small enough to do that type of project? And you said that the backhoes that we have are too large to get into some of the areas we're trying to get to. I'm How many excavators does the city have?
You know, I don't have that number right off the top of my head, Councilman Bell, but I certainly would provide that. I do believe we have another mini, close to a mini excavator that the road crew uses. The problem is that just like the vac trucks or anything else, is the time of year that we're able to do that work. They're doing work with those equipments for the road crew, and it's difficult to trade that out for extended periods of time that would be needed. So it affects each project and maintenance plan that they have for the summer.
Okay. And this looks, you know, compared to past or previous, you know, rolling stock replacements, this looks fairly conservative. So, you know, I like that. And the question that comes to mind is, are there pieces of equipment that we've deferred replacing, or are we getting caught up on what the plan or where the plan is at?
Councilman Bell, great question. I believe that the plan's working. They came up with a plan in 2008, and I remember what the vehicle situation looked like back then. Huge improvement, you know. We're not deferring anything. Some people might not be as happy with a hand-me-down as others, but it's really working. I don't see there being a big we do have some heavy equipment that we do need to start funneling through a little bit. So you will be seeing that before you. But our regular rolling stock is really in great shape.
And then my last question, it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to answer it tonight. I've noticed in several departments when you're going around the city, the increase in number of vehicles. It appears that some vehicles are just not going away when they're replaced. Are we getting to a point where we may need to look at additional mechanics for the workload of all these vehicles, or have we actually increased the number of vehicles much over the last, you know, say 3, 4, 5 years?
It may appear that way. First of all, the mechanic thing, our question, more help is always useful. You know, we're full out there this year. Finally, we've got a full team. We haven't had that for a little while. So I think some of the regular oil changes and those things are getting back to being caught up again. The warranty checks and those things we're back on track on, or at least getting close to that. It may appear that we've got a bunch of additional vehicles, and looking at this, but if you look at the surplus sale, you see we're actually, they're going to start, you're seeing them go away. They've been hanging around long enough. So I think we've got, I don't remember off the top of my head, but we've got several vehicles that will be going away that you'll see. And then you'll see another big load. We're still waiting for police cars that we've got purchased last year. Just lead time is forever on this stuff. They're finally getting all the goodies put on them and all that. So you'll see those replacement vehicles being sent out to other departments, and then those vehicles that we were slated to be surplus will show up in your next surplus sale when you see that as well. Hopefully that answered your question.
Yes, thank you.
Any other question? Hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Brown. I like those numbers. They're sure more, a lot better than the last year's number that we, one on the dump truck. There's still quite a lifetime on those old dump truck that we got.
Vice Mayor Tungle. Right now I have one dump truck operational and I have three that are down. And it's for this one that we're talking about, the transmission's out. And it's really not worth replacing for transmission, even if we could get one. The other trucks are brakes and parts that are difficult to get. Leaf springs, we have a hard time getting leaf springs even. They're going to be, we have to almost have them made from scratch. They're just the wrong size, the wrong torques, just because the equipment's just old. It's difficult to get parts. The other problem is they are starting to show like old vehicles in Alaska, the rusting and the floorboards have already been replaced. And, you know, so, it, you know, they're still operational. We're still using them. But it is getting tougher to put Band-Aids back on.
Thank you. Any other question? Thank you, Mr. Brown.
If it's okay with Vice
Mayor. Now we go to the painting plan.
Yes, I'd like to discuss the painting plan, if that's all right. The painting plan, first, I'd like to just say that, you know, we talk about a lot of preventive maintenance and preventive maintenance issues that are coming up in the future, and they're real. The one thing I would like to say is our painting on our city facilities is really in good shape. We've had a good painting plan in the past. It's kept up. So we're really in a good spot with that. With that said, we still got to keep moving on it. We did tried to look at a conservative approach to it. The dollar values on here, it was super tough. We reached out to numerous people to try and help us with some cost estimates. We were stuck from anywhere from $10 or $11 a square foot to $4 a square foot. So we just kind of tried to mix and match the most that. Our senses is there, we're a little bit high on our estimates. So we're hoping that things will come in a little bit lower than what we've predicted. With that said, I've got a 3-year plan here. Last year, council granted us and we presented for 1 year. And it's partially I was new trying to get my head wrapped around all this. And we had an existing plan going. 1 year does not work. It didn't work in the past. I was advised that. It just doesn't work. Painting is a tough thing out here because if everything's a go right now, we can put that RFP out for July 1st when the funding's available. And, of course, that's when our season starts to get the painting done. So it makes it really tough. So, really, we'll get a little bit done hopefully in 25 before the winter hits. But really, we're planning on the big is come back, finish what you didn't get in 25, hit what you got in 26, and then 27, we'll do that. And then we would be planning the next 3-year plan as well. I'm hoping to give you a 10-year look ahead on the painting plan next year. And this year, we were comfortable with giving you 3 years, and that's also what we're asking to try and do. With that, I want to try and stay away from, even though it's published here, the dollar values if I can on specific items. But in 2025, we're hoping to do we're hoping to do 3 buildings, 2 general fund buildings and 1 proprietary building. And that would be the Henry Swanson House and the 8-plex. We're hoping to do in 2025. Our priority would be get the 8-plex done first. And then we also want to hit the power substation, Airport Beach Road, that's across from City Hall right here. And then in 2025, we want to do the high school aquatic center and the Agnes Beach building, which is the one that's just below public safety on the right hand side there. And then in 2027, we're hoping to do the museum. We're also going to have some discussions with the museum because they want some changes. They're trying to do some remodels, so we want to make sure we're not interfering with any of that. And the Burma Road Chapel, and then the 4-plex, and also Carl Moses oil building needs some touch-up work done on it. So we're hoping to throw that in as well. What that does for the budget for FY25, we're asking for $170,000 in painting for 25. Keeping in mind, in FY26, we'll be looking for $208,000, and then in FY27, we'll be looking for $195,000 to keep up with our painting program. My hope is to put a contract together that, similar to like how we do our fuel and other contracts that are multiple years, will come back to you every year for the money. At any time, you can change that and decide you don't want to stick with those numbers. We'll write it into our contract that we'll have the ability for both parties to continue on with the contract as it goes, as we've put it out there. And there may be changes a little bit each year, too, as far as couldn't get to the Aplex, so we'll slap that on, and the dollars will have to follow that. So, but that is the three-year painting plan.
A question with the council? Councilman Luby.
So are we looking to do this in-house, or are we going to put an RFP out, or just was curious on how we were going to do it?
Councilman Luby, good question. No, our plan would be we don't have the personnel to do it in-house. We will do in-house. We will take care of, you know, pump houses and some of the smaller buildings that we have in the valley and some of the smaller things up in Pyramid. When we get into the big projects like the PCR or school and aquatic center, we just don't have the manpower to tie up. Well, we've got too many projects throughout, especially the summer months, it would just wipe us out as far as manpower. The other part of it is it's, I know this is the painting, but there's also other things they have to do, replace trim, rotten boards. So they're also, that's part of what we would be asking these people to do, is to do all the prep work and then the painting as well. But our intentions is to contract that out with an RFP.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
That wrapped up our work session. I request a motion and a second to return to a regular session.
I make a motion to go into regular agenda.
Second.
So, motion was made by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Bell. Any objection? Hearing no objection, we're back in a regular session at 7:37 p.m. Now we are now on a regular agenda. Person wishing to speak on the regular agenda items must sign up with the clerk. 3-minute time limit per person. First on a regular agenda is a resolution 2024-11, authorizing the sale of surplus personal property. May I have a motion and a second to adopt ordinance 2024-11?
I make a motion to adopt resolution 2024-11.
Second.
Okay. So motion made by Councilman Nicholson and seconded by Councilman Luby. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So resolution 2024-11 is Council's authorization to staff to sell by public outcry auction surplus personal property owned by the city. We're following a well-established procedure of disposing of surplus personal property, and the auction is scheduled for May 4th. City departments have already been provided an opportunity to claim items from other departments. And before the auction, we will also allow our local nonprofit organizations the opportunity to claim items free of charge. So revenue from the auction will go back into the general fund or the proprietary fund as appropriate. And staff recommends adoption.
Discussion and question. Councilmember Luby.
So I believe in the past it was kind of mostly been sealed bids. Is that the way it was before versus the public outcry?
I can't tell you how many years it's been, but we've been doing the public outcry auctions for quite a while now.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's the, like you would do a pallet of different things, and we're going to continue to do
this. Yeah, our supply department puts them in lots.
Okay.
And it groups things together. That's not like
here, I have a cell phone case bid on it, you know, or I have a file folder, a case of file folders or whatever. It's, they group them into lots.
Okay. That I was just, yeah, I was just curious on that. Thank you.
I think this is all happening at the public works department in there, next to the building in there. Any other question?
I will say the vehicles are done separately. They're not in lots. And I did a real quick glance at the list, and I think there's 9 pieces of rolling stock that are going to be included in the auction. They're not all vehicles, but rolling stock, that general definition that Scott shared with us earlier.
Any other question? Hearing none, City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide a public comment?
No, sir.
Has anyone signed up to provide, does anyone on the phone, on Zoom?
No, sir.
Okay. Can I please request a roll call vote?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor. Council Member Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes. Motion passes 4-0. So Ordinance 2024-11 is adopted on in red. Resolution 2024-11 is adopted. Next is Resolution 2024-12, authorizing a lease of an Alaska Marine Center upland and accommodation of berth scheduling for Matson to benefit the Unalaska Marine Center pursuant to UCO 7.08.090. May I have a motion in a second to adopt Ordinance 2024-12?
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-12.
Second.
Motion made by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Luby. City Manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So Resolution 2024-12 authorizes the City Manager to negotiate and sign a lease with Matson for the uplands at the Unalaska Marine Center, which will provide a priority berthing for Matson's line haul vessels and their weekly barge service. The minimum, the term is 20 years with 2 5-year renewals for a minimum of 20 years and a maximum of 30. The lease rate is to be set and adjusted by the tariff. And in this agreement, Matson agrees to complete improvements, which include installation of a new crane at the Unalaska Marine Center. This agreement benefits the Unalaska Marine Center and is in conjunction with the Port Infrastructure Development Program grant that you heard about at your meeting on February 27th, that public-private partnership that we would like to enter into Matson with on that grant program. The improvements of the dock and this lease also tie into the city's project to resurface the UMC at positions 5-7. So our city attorney was heavily involved in this, and he actually wrote the resolution and the lease. So you can be rest assured that that has gone through our legal process as well. Our ports director, Peggy McLaughlin, is available to respond to any questions that you might have, but staff recommends adoption.
Council discussion. Question? Councilman Bell?
Looks like this lease that's included in the packet here is fairly complete. Is there anything left to negotiate, or is this just looking for approval for the length of the term from council?
This will just authorize the city manager to enter into a lease agreement. There are a few bits and pieces that I'm sure we'll iron out. It's in Matson's legal review right now. So there'll be some things like insurance pieces. There'll be some pieces of maybe some language around, you know, how we schedule the berthing and those kind of things. But it's what is set will be a minimum term of 20 with a maximum of 30. It'll be at tariff rate, and it applies to those parcels of land. The lay down yard is the only piece that's a little bit different. And that is if we end up moving forward with future construction or projects, we have the ability to pull that out from this main agreement to be able to do a construction project or build a new facility or whatever.
Okay, and then the the project, the grant that
that Masson has applied for and that we've supported. Does that include any construction in the back reach, or is there any agreement to do for improvements back there?
There is. There's not improvements written into this particular lease. The grant application is still in progress. It's due May 10. We are putting forward the cost of surfacing the back reach with pavers, but depending on the granting opportunity, that may end up being the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, it's good to see this moving forward, so I will support this resolution.
Any other question? Councilmember Luby.
So when you talk about the back reach, so the preferential mostly applies to the dock face. Is that what you're saying?
We're getting way, way away from preferential.
Okay.
Because that's very problematic. Okay. But what we have committed to in this lease is their line haul vessels and their weekly barge service. And they provide us with a schedule with that. So the berthing priority is for those vessels only on their traditional or scheduled published schedule.
Okay.
The back reach is basically where they need to do infrastructure changes for the crane tie downs. And the back reach will support their operations. So they may want to do other improvements down the line, like a Marine Department building or a different gang shack and those kind of things. And this lease will allow them to do those things.
Okay,
I'm not sure if I answered your question.
But you did, actually. That's what I was wondering, because I was like, how is that going to work? And if we wanted to, we're going to pay the cost of the pavers, they would not?
The pavers would be paid by the grant right now.
Okay, that would be
if the grant doesn't support the pavers, they're not going to happen in this round unless Matson wants to do them.
Okay, okay. That makes sense. Thank you very much.
Any other question? I agree. This is it's a good thing for the city, and we know Matson has been coming here all these years, bringing all our food and supplies. They've been on a weekly basis, and they help out the community, and it's nice to be partner with them. Thank you, Peggy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide the public comment?
No, sir, and no one on Zoom either.
Can I request a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes. So resolution passes 4-0. Next is the ordinance 2024-06, creating a budget amendment number 6 to fiscal year 2024. Budget appropriation $4,700,000 from the 1% sales tax fund for an increase to the Captain's Bay Road Waterline Extension Project, and decreasing the budget for the Macusin Geothermal Project by $1,850,000. May I have a motion in a second to introduce Ordinance 2024-06 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on April 23, 2024.
I'll make a motion to I didn't look at it. Excuse me one second, please. On the screen. Okay, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I move to introduce Ordinance 2024-06 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on April 23rd, 2024.
Second.
Motion started by Councilman Bell, seconded by Councilman Coleman. Councilman Luby. Can I have the city manager introduce?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Mayor. So if adopted, Well, this budget, as we read in the title, this budget amendment has two elements. So if adopted, the first element is increasing the water capital projects budget by $4,700,000, with funding coming from the 1% special revenue fund, the 1% sales tax fund that's dedicated to capital projects. So this is an entirely appropriate use of that special revenue fund. The purpose of the funding is to construct phase one of the Captain's Bay Road waterline extension project to extend the waterline from westward to OSI up Captain's Bay Road. And this project solves lots of existing problems and will improve operations, maintenance, and prepare for future development down Captain's Bay Road. The second element of the budget amendment is decreasing the Makushin geothermal project by $1,850,000. So this is money that we will no longer plan to receive from OCCP for the project because the city chose to allow that power purchase agreement to expire. So it's just taking that anticipated funding out of the budget for that project. And staff recommends approval.
Council discussion. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, looking at, thank you for giving me a balance on the 1% fund. Yeah, obviously there's sufficient funds in there to do this. It's a project that needs to be done for quite a while as to take care of that water line. My only question would be, if you got a trench open, can you put anything else in that trench, or do we need to put anything else in that trench?
I'm going to call up someone from Public Works to answer that question. Thank you, Scott.
We still need to do some sewer line work down that way, but they have to have a separation, so there's not really anything that we can trench in there. We've got all the utility runs done. There's nothing else we can include in that trenching for the water line.
Okay. Yeah, there's no future improvements or anything that would be going down that way.
Well, we've already put in the utility corridor for the electrical. That would be stuff that needs to be pulled yet. And then the sewer line separation has to be, yeah, so.
Yeah, yep, that's, no water.
We got it.
In the same trench, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all we got.
All thank right. You. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other question? Without any other question, does anyone sign up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No, no one signed up for this one.
Okay. Once again, this is Ordinance 2024-06, creating budget amendment number 6 to the fiscal year 2024 budget, appropriating $4,700,000 from the 1% sales tax fund for an increase to the Captain's Bay Road waterline extension project, and decreasing the budget for the Makushin geothermal project for $1,850,000. Can I request a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Mr. Vice Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes. Ordinance 2024-06 passes 4-0. Next is council directives to city manager, if there's any. It's got to be, the directive need to be in a motion in a second and a roll call vote. Hearing none, next item is community input and announcement. This is the final opportunity to provide information to council or to make announcement. 3-minute time limit applies. Any last announcement from the public? City Clerk, are there any written comments submitted, or does anyone on Zoom wish to speak?
No, sir.
Well, having completed all items on this agenda, we are adjourned at 7:54 p.m. Thank you.